Hello, everyone. I'm Oriol Vinyals, and I'm going to be talking about deep learning and more concretely on using deep learning on tandem features and analyzing how it performs for robust ASR, basically seeing how it does with noise. So a bit of related work and background. Deep learning, I'm not going to go into many details, but it's basically the idea of having many layers of computation, and typically it's just a neural network with better initialization than just random. So in 2006, Hinton introduced these RBMs, which apparently helped a lot on training these deep models. And since then, many groups are working on deep learning. You can see that by the amount of publications on machine learning conferences and also related conferences such as these or computer vision conferences like CVPR. And there's some people that applied already deep learning to speech, and it's quite recent, the last couple of years. And but indeed, estimating phone posteriors using neural networks or deep neural networks is not a new idea. And basically, there's been two main approaches. One that uses the phone posteriors to get the emission model for the HMM, the hybrid HMM model, and the other that uses tandem, which means we take just the posteriors as features and then just use them in an otherwise standard GMM-HMM system. And tandem is quite attractive because many techniques rely on GMM-HMM systems, so that's the kind of approach that we are looking here in this work. So just to... Okay. So just to just explain briefly what tandem is, for those who don't know, we just get some sort of estimates per frame of posterior probabilities for the phones on the top, and then there's several techniques and tricks that have been applied and found 10 years ago or so. So those posterior probabilities, we apply the log to them, and then we do we whiten them so they match better the GMM diagonal covariance assumption. We do mean variance normalization, and then lastly, we just concatenate them with the MFCCs or some spectral features, and we train and or decode with this extended feature set. So pretty easy to understand it and easy to implement as well. And so, okay. So let me jump on to the main points of this work. First, what we want to see is how phone posteriors coming from a deep neural network combined with spectral features, if there's any gain there when we add them to the MFCCs in this tandem fashion. Also, and this is probably very interesting, and I don't know if this has been addressed yet, how does noise affect the deep neural net-based systems? And in particular, we want to analyze or kind of rule out what parts of the deep learning are helping in which situations. So for that, as I said, we have some sub-questions regarding deep learning. So, for example, when and why does having a deep structure matter? That's the first question. Then we can also ask ourselves, what about pre-training, these RBM pre-training that I was talking about? Is it important or not? And lastly, we know that to train neural networks, it gets tricky sometimes, especially when they are deep. So does the optimization technique use matter? And in the paper, mostly it was focused on the first two points. The third point was touched, but not very deeply. And the last two, it's something I've been working on, and it's not in the paper, but I'm going to talk about this in this talk. And so referring to those questions, like some way to see neural networks. The good part of deep neural networks is that they are powerful models, very expressive, and they can represent very complicated nonlinear relations. That's good because we know our brain probably does that. And also, they are attractive because gradient is easy to compute. And in fact, now with the parallel computing and GPUs, since all it's involved is some matrix operations, they can actually be trained pretty fast, and it's very efficient. But there's some bad things. So it poses a non-convex optimization problem, and there's a vanishing gradients problem that if we are very deep, the gradients tend to zero. So it's kind of, they are not easy to train, especially when they are very deep, the neural networks. And also, number of parameters is often very large. In fact, our brain has even orders of magnitude more than the neural nets that we are training nowadays. So overfitting is an issue that people are worried about, obviously, as in many other machine learning techniques. And then something that people don't like about neural networks is they are kind of difficult to interpret what's going on. But there's some exceptions, and there's many, like, there's some people who work in computer vision and also speech that are analyzing actually what the neurons are learning. And it's impressive in computer vision, for example, you can see that the first layer is learning basically what V1 in our brain is doing, these Gabor-like filters for computer vision on natural images. So actually, this part is actually becoming good in some sense to interpret and maybe even enhance deep learning. And so just to be concrete on exactly the experiments that we've done, we trained this kind of neural network, so it was deep because it has, as you can see, three hidden layers, and on the left we have just the input, just with like 39 acoustic observations and 9 frames of context. And then we have the three following layers with 500, 1,000, and 1,500 binary or logistic units. And lastly, the last layer, it's the one that will estimate the phone posteriors through the softmax layer. And let me say that I didn't train or overtune these, so I came up with this architecture and I've been using this. I haven't changed like the parameters and so on, because really I wanted to see the effect and compare with shallow networks. But probably better numbers could be found just by trying different architectures. And so jumping in the experimental setup, we use the Aurora corpus, so it's fairly small, around 1.4 million samples for training at 10 milliseconds per sampling rate. And as we know, like the testing conditions are with added noise at different SNR levels, such as train station, airport, and so on. And let me, we train our models on clean speech, and then we are testing them on these several noisy conditions just to see where the deep is helping us in the noisy conditions, if at all. And then we just use the standard HMM model proposed in the Aurora 2 setup and the same decoding scheme. So this first table of results, let me just explain it. It's on as rows you can see just the different noise conditions, starting from clean and adding more noise. And in the parentheses, you see the kind of relevant differences. So if we rerun these experiments randomly, we observe around 0.2, 0.4, and 0.4 in word error rate difference. So that's kind of the significant level of these results. And then the first column of results is just standard MFCC model. We can see, obviously, as we add noise, it degrades. And the next two columns are from what we published from ICSI, so basically that tandem MLP. So the first column would be the MLP would be just using MLP features, no MFCCs, and tandem MLP is concatenating both. So we can see that concatenating MFCC helps because all the numbers are basically lower, and it helps also improve the word error rates for all the noisy conditions. Now, with the deep belief network that I show, basically we get better results across all the noise conditions, and in particular, even on clean speech, we get an improvement, which is, I guess, compatible with other people findings on Timid and so on. And the improvements are consistently better than the tandem MLP approach that was proposed several years ago, which is good news. And also see that MFCC usually helps, but when there's a lot of noise that is in the 5 dB or 0 dB case, actually then the tandem DBM does worse, and maybe using just the DBM front posteriors is better. So answers both the first questions, that is how front posteriors combined in a tandem fashion when we use deep learning versus just MLP feature learning, and then how does noise affect. So it seems that deep neural nets are also good for noise and not for only like clean speech. And now I'm going to jump into some more recent results. Partially, I was able to run this because I've been working on a second-order optimization method proposed in an ICML-10, which kind of suggested that maybe pre-training or this RBM business was not necessary if you use some sort of second-order optimization in the backprop step. So I'm going to go step by step through these questions and the columns to look at. So first, does optimization matter? What we did here is, in the column, the first two columns are the same as previously. So the tandem MLP was trained using a standard techniques, stochastic gradient descent. And it's kind of, after 700 or so hidden units, we didn't see any improvement in performance. The last column, the tandem MLP with the little star, we were actually able to train a bigger model, basically as many parameters as the deep neural net model that I will show later and that I show in the beginning. And as we can see, at least for the low noise regions, the tandem MLP with the better optimization and more parameters actually outperforms the tandem MLP without this new optimization. But then on the like higher noise conditions, it degrades. So that's kind of disappointing, but maybe because there's so many units, there's some sort of overfitting, and the model cannot deal well with that. So that brings us to the next point. When does deep matter? So now, let's take the parameters of this single tandem MLP layer, which is around 3 million, by the way, and let's use it in the deep neural network that I was describing at the beginning, but with no pre-training, so it's not the deep belief network that Hinton proposed, it's just a regular neural net with many layers. And what we see here is the performance is identical, but on the high noise situations, actually, the hit that we saw in performance actually is gone, and we actually get a bit better. So my hypothesis here is maybe adding the deepness has some sort of effect on being able to cancel the noise better than if we have just a shallow network. Obviously, this is just an hypothesis, but from the results, we can probably see that. And lastly, the pre-training. So this is basically from the first table, it's the same neural net, but with this pre-training step, we see that it improves up on the deep neural net that has not been pre-trained. So what that means, and it improves across all the noise conditions. So I think what this means is pre-training basically helps us with generalization. We know actually that for overfitting, pre-training helps quite a lot. So for the MNIST dataset that was published in the Science paper, there's huge overfitting and pre-training help a lot. But in this case, it helps not on the clean condition, but on the even when the noise is quite low, it helps to pre-train the weights, that is to make them towards some sort of generative and not only discriminative objective function. And so lastly, to conclude this discussion about the error analysis and so on, I look at the frame level for an error rate of all these three networks, which is fairly similar. So I just brought some random phones, and we can see that there's the phone error rate seems similar. But then when we add the noise, right, the DBNs learn more robust representations, because what we see is when we add a large amount of noise, it outperforms both the deep neural net and the shallow neural net trained with both with the better optimization technique. So I believe like the deep, maybe it's aiding us to learn basically better representations of the data, as it has been found actually also in computer vision and so on. And so basically to conclude, I think it is now, well, it's been clear, I think, but deep learning and works also in tandem, not only in the hybrid systems, which is good news for those who have a lot of engineering work around GMMs and HMM system. And furthermore, adding the MFCCs is still, so for those who are working on hybrid systems, maybe they should incorporate more spectral information somehow, especially if there's not a lot of noise. then pre-training, we know it helps for overfitting, but also it helps for kind of generalization in the cases where we have a mismatch, a clear mismatch between training, which was trained on clean speech and testing. And also, I think deep models seem to use, given the same amount of parameters, they seem to be more robust in very high noisy situations, which was found also in computer vision. And obviously, these conclusions are for now based on a fairly small task. And I think for future work, it would be interesting to go, I guess, larger data set, which we are actually working on that, and also to compare between the so-called deep neural net HMM model and this deep tandem HMM. Thank you very much. I'll take some questions.
Yes, question? Go ahead, please proceed to the microphone.
I have a question regarding your comments on the deep network. Can you go back to the slides you summarized?
Sure. This?
No, it's at the beginning. So you summarize the good thing and bad thing.
Oh, yeah, sure. This one.
Next one?
Yeah.
Yeah, so when you summarize the bad thing for the deep network, and here you mentioned the two points. When you train the network, so there's one problem is the vanishing the gradients, mm-hmm. right? And another one is overfitting, right?
Yeah.
And to me, these two points seems if you are training the model, right? So if you are getting smaller the gradient, mm-hmm. which means basically the model is remain the same, and you cannot change the model dramatically, right? Mm-hmm. And how could this lead to the overfittings? Is some, one thing happening in some case or the another thing happened in the other case?
I think these two happen independently. So in my case, actually, in my experiments, I didn't observe a whole lot of overfitting. So I was just doing L2 regularization on the weights, but I didn't have overfitting. But in other cases, like if you read the science paper from Hinton, there's a lot of, like, they have only like 20,000 samples, and their overfitting is, you basically get to 0% okay. training error. In those cases, obviously, the optimization method doesn't matter that much, and it's basically how you bias your weights towards these using these RBMs.
So next question, I don't know which one.
No.
Okay. In deep belief networks, you said there is some pre-training happening. So that means you must be using some additional data which is not used to train the network, right?
Not for this. In this case, like the pre-training, it's unsupervised. So in theory, you could add a lot of data, a lot more okay. data to pre-train.
So
but, yeah.
So my question is, did you do the same thing for a deep neural network? Because probably up to a certain layer, mm-hmm. we can train deep neural network in autoassociative mode. So did you do the same thing for deep neural network? The thing that you did for deep belief net? I'll be more clear.
Okay.
I guess in deep belief networks, mm-hmm. The pre-training is essentially done in autoassociative mode, meaning try to reconstruct the input feature vector at its output.
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to deep neural network, we can do the similar pre-training in the sense that add a last layer where you try to reconstruct. And
no, I didn't do that. So the deep neural net was trained just take the whole objective function
okay.
and the whole neural net and do backprop with okay. random weights in initialization.
Okay, probably that is a fair comparison.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. You're concatenating the outputs from the MLP to the MFCC, so
yeah.
you probably want to have the most different information coming from the MLP. So I wonder, when you do the backpropagation mm-hmm. over that, you're basically forcing the MLP to focus on something which discriminates between the classes that you decide to use. Did you try to look at how that would work if you did concatenate the features coming from unretrained GBN, like not doing the retraining?
Yeah.
Would it contain something different?
So actually, the deep neural net is trained before the concatenation happens. So in a sense, you just have the phone targets and you train the neural net first, and then you concatenate and train the HMM. So I'm not sure if I.
No, I'm saying. I think you were using the outputs of the
Yeah, so...
All right.
So you train your network first, and then once you have it trained, you keep it fixed, and then you don't do any more backprop after you concatenate. You could do that, but it...
Once you have the network trained, before the backpropagation, you still have the same number of output neurons as you will have after the backpropagation, right? So,
yeah.
So this, you can choose whether you concatenate to the MFCCs, what you have now, or you will have after the backpropagation, right? Mm-hmm. Or am I missing something?
I don't understand.
I think we probably need to proceed.
Okay, so
and thank
sorry,
you. We can, handy, we can put that the offline. Okay, thank you.
Thanks.